Folks, welcome back to the iHealth channel, iHealth Radio, the podcaster channel, the NBC network, the works, with a new show, a new guest, an interesting, and it's going to be a very nice little discussion we're going to have today with my guest, because we're going to touch on biology, cell biology, physiology, metabolic health, a little bit of personal research, science. I mean, we're going to touch on all the stuff, you know, what's going on today in the science world and everything else that touches our body. So with someone who actually does the work to help people, you know, in this particular arena, an entrepreneur, a personal research scientist, an athlete, he's a trained cell biologist, solopreneur, freelance scientist, the works. I mean, so yeah, you can hear it, right? So with me, I have Daniel Tosin. Daniel, did I say that right?
You got it. Perfect.
Oh, okay. You know, I give it a good shot there. So thank you for Clive and I did a good job there. So that's perfect. That's important. Well, Daniel, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, Hurricane, it's an absolute pleasure. I'm super excited here to break down some nitty gritties of what keeps us alive, healthy, and thriving.
Well, listen, you know, we're on the health channel here, iHealth Radio, and health is a topic that I think everybody's interested in. And it's also everything affects our health, you know, whether both mental, physical. But sometimes we know about health, you know, through different angles, but we don't know enough about health, and we don't know enough about all the stuff that affects us, you know. So that's where we are, and we'd like to bring in, you know, more information. And we've been doing that for a few years, and there's a lot of people out there doing the same work, and there's not enough, and we're going to continue doing this. But your work seems to be very unique because you're doing some, you know, again, personal research science. I mean, you know, let's talk about that. Just that's on its own kind of interesting, you know, title that you have there.
Yeah. So, you know, ultimately people can hire me to help them work through either if they've lost their health and they need to regain it, or if they're completely healthy and they want to know what is the up-to-date understanding of physiology, ultimately of biology, that keeps us, you know, having a lifespan that's, you know, called a health span. It's not about making it to 100, but, you know, if you make it to 88, that you can still have a conversation, that you still have your cognition, that you can still do a handstand, that you can still get frisky with your lady, right? So all that is possible. And this common, call it, decline for what we're seeing in our population with how we age, it might be common, but it's not normal. You're not meant to deteriorate at such a rapid rate or to not have function, cognitive function in those years. And you can see that. You can see people that live more harmoniously in line with their health, or call it in line with nature or in line with biology, whatever name you want to give it. Ultimately, there is a rule set that you must abide by. And if you don't respect the biology, you don't get to participate in it in such, I'd say, fruitful way. And that's really what the test of time, you know, goes to show who's going to be right, who's going to be wrong. And it really doesn't matter at the end of the day, if, you know, if someone wants to say, oh, you got to eat carbs, you got to eat fat, you got to eat protein, this and that. You know, the guy who's 88 and can still have, you know, life while everyone else is, you know, 6 feet under is the person that was right all along. And so today we're in a bit of I think people know it. Some people don't want to admit it, but we're in quite the mess of not being able to decipher or even recognize what science is anymore. And marketing has done a phenomenal job, right? We could talk about calcium. You know, I still see and I still talk to individuals that say, well, I have to drink milk. Where am I going to get my calcium? But, you know, you can take a very small amount of time to take a look. Well, let me ask the question of where is calcium present in what foods? And it's one of the most plentiful minerals in all our food. You know, how do muscles contract? They contract based off calcium. How do plants build their structure? They build their structure based off calcium. So, you know, this idea that I have to drink milk to get calcium is just an idea. It's just an example of how marketing has done a really good job. Breakfast, lunch, dinner. Marketing does a phenomenal job of getting you to overeat, overconsume, and probably eat the wrong things at the wrong time. And so, you know, I started out as an athlete and I wanted to go down the doctor route, but I realized that I wouldn't survive as a doctor. You know, one, I asked too many questions.
I'm sorry.
You know, I ask way too many questions. And so, you know, I wouldn't be able to turn people over. I wouldn't be able to be good in the clinic. I would spend hours with one individual trying to go a deep dive and trying to make sense and tie everything together. And so, naturally, I went towards, research and science, in which I did 4 years of my PhD until COVID came. And I decided, well, I'm working with people already. People are already coming to me for help. People are already coming to me to get understanding. And I've been working in big data for quite a while. So I get to see, for example, 300 biomarkers, 300 measurements in the blood. So maybe not jump too many words to make it too new for individuals. But, we have technologies now, both in Canada and in America, where you get your blood drawn and you don't get what your doctor gives you, where, you might get 5 to 10 measurements and you have to give 4 vials of blood. Now with one vial of blood, you're getting 300, right? And that's pretty impressive. So with that deep, extensive, look into what an individual's health is, it's allowed me to be, the person that I like, the nerd, the absolute inquisitive nature that is insatiable. I get to take that with each individual. And it's really caused some problems for me in terms of, accepting people's, excuses for their health. They'll say, oh, it's genetic. Definitely not. We can talk about that and how, the idea of things being genetic has been a complete way of disempowering individuals. If it's genetic, you'd know from a young age. If you have a healthy genome, all that means is you got a functional protein. And even if, let's say this new generation is being born worse off than their predecessors, their parents, right? So grandma and grandpa did great. They held on. They, made their genome nice and healthy, stable. They passed it on and they messed up, and they passed it on to their kids with absolute atrocious predispositions, meaning it's easier to gain weight. It's harder to keep focus. It's harder to regulate your neurotransmitters. It's easier to get, diseases. It's easier to get infections. But even if you have that genome, you can change the course of your life based off your actions. And I think very few people are, one, saying that, but two, that's what the science says. We've known this for a really long time. And it's just that marketing does a really good job of quieting out the people that are right, because it's hard to make money off of, call it, the free modalities that, keep our health going. So, this is the route I've taken. I'm sort of the rogue scientist, freelance scientist. And, people usually come to me when the medical system has failed them, which is a shame. People are now seeing that, okay, healthcare doesn't look the same as it did 50, 60 years ago. And people are seeing their parents die on, 5 to 12 medications. And they're like, well, that's not the way I want to go about it. What do I do? What's going on? Why is everyone talking about calories? What do calories have anything to do with nutrition? And so that's where I started my company, Timeline Sciences, with a very simple idea, right? We're all sharing a timeline, right? We're this is here now. You can't escape it. You might take some alcohol and you kind of get boozed up. You fall asleep. You still come back to the now, right? You can take something to slow you down. You might be lagging a few minutes, but as soon as it wears off, you come back to the now. So we have a timeline that we're all experiencing, and science allows you to describe the timeline. That's what science is there for. And I think people forgot the tool of science, right? I mean, we can kind of go off of how people use the word science, and I think it's the most butchered word in the English language by far.
All right. Well, hold on, Daniel. So there's quite a bit, and we gotta dissect this whole thing that you just covered, because we can spend hours learning like a few books on just what you just kind of started this discussion with. Well, first things first. Interesting, because I've had live coaches, health coaches and stuff, but I have not had scientist coaches or scientist people, that actually work your body, your dynamics through science and stuff. I mean, I've had a couple of discussions with stem cells, folks and things like that, and they do work, with people to biohack and things like that. But really, the concept of using your back, deep understanding of science and like you said, the genetic markers and things like that, into really understanding how people can live. And you refer to the idea of longevity, but really it's healthy and vital vitality versus just life. Because as you said, lifespan, it's not, I always said this in many shows, that I don't believe that we can extend our life, but we can, we have a lifespan, a timeline. We're going to be here, we're going to leave, right? But how do you live throughout that timeline is the key. Do we want to live vital and happy and active, towards the latter part of our lives? And believe me, folks, those that are watching and listening, time flies real fast. I mean, I literally, I look back, I'm, 53, and it just went so fast. And I'm looking up, my dad passed at 73. So I'm only 20 years from his departure. And that's if I'm lucky, now I can potentially pass that, but it doesn't matter. It's how do I live whatever remains in my life, whether it's a day, 10 days, a year, or 100 years. I mean, not 100 years. I don't know if that's possible, but everything is possible, right? We've seen people exceed that. And there are people around the world today that are actually over 100 that are still active. And I actually post some stuff when I see those things, some reels about people that are advanced age that are doing terrific stuff, whether it's athletic stuff or just like moving and doing, I worked in the Medicare, the senior market, and I've actually encountered people in the 90s who are super active, super healthy, and they have secrets to what their diet is one, their lifestyle is another. And, maybe to your point, it's not so much the genetics, it's how you do things. But that's one piece. The other piece that I found very fascinating of something you stated was the idea that you could not go to become a doctor because you asked too many questions. And, that is so sad in a way, because you would think today that doctors will spend more time asking the right questions and stuff like that to help people determine. I mean, I'm in sales in general, right? That's my kind of core business, right? But in the health insurance and all stuff. So that's why I'm leaning towards the health part of it. But the fact of the matter is we discover people in sales, right? You understand them, you understand their needs, the pains and all the stuff that's going to help them, help you understand what the product's going to serve them, in the right way. And so therefore you can do a better job with them. Well, similarly, there's nothing better than the health. So you would need to ask people. And unfortunately, again, today we're to a point where it's 10 to 15 minutes tops if you spend with your doctor, and you'll see them once a year, if anything. And that's not enough to get to know you. I mean, I love what you said about having four vials plus to get a few, tests done versus and all the standard tests, for the most part, you don't get deep. You're talking about 360 plus. I think that's what you mentioned, 360, genetic markers. That's like everything. I mean, you sound like some of the guys that I follow on social that are talking about all the concept. I forgot the dude. I mean, he's now the name just escapes me, but he's all about the genetics and how you can test for stuff. I think he's been on Joe Rogan's and a few other places. I think who I'm talking about. But the fact is, these are things that are important. And I love that you decided to go to science and really expand on that. Now I love science personally, but as you said, what is science? And you nicely put it. There's a lot of butchered, concepts of science. So I'd like you to go there and define this for us, in the real world. You also talked about genome, and for some, people may not know what the genome is. I mean, it's a technical term, but I think it's things with genetics. Maybe you can, explain that in further details. And then, the other part is you talked about how the marketing really kind of ruins it for everything and created almost a path for everybody to think that's the correct path. And market is genius, right? I mean, that's what it does. It just creates, suggestive ideology that actually gets into your psyche or, your subconscious, and you behave that drives behavior, right? And so we have that as a big deal. And you're right. Since you're a kid, you're being suggested things, whether it's, breakfast of the champions, what is it? Cereal, orange juice, and, some other stuff. A lot of color that is artificial, all the things that may not be good for you, but yet you bacon, all the stuff, and then you realize that, we might not have to eat three meals, four meals a day either, right? But yet that's when we're conditioned to those things. You're going to have the breakfast, the best meal, night, lunch. And so these are all questions. Now, all of us grew up with this, right? And more today than ever, right? And we just think that's the right way to go. But it's not really the right way, because as you said, today we're looking at, people getting sick early, too many medications, we have, obesity all over the place. Yet it didn't happen before. Although you have opinions that say, oh, we're advanced in medicine, we're advanced in science, we're advanced in everything, we are living better and longer. Is that even the truth? Right. And actually, I had discussion before where I was almost like that was debunked. That's not the truth any longer. We have problems, but now having you here, I mean, I'm just going to indulge in asking these questions and throwing this, because you're touching on these big things. Right. And I think it will be perfect for audiences to at least be acquainted with the reality of things. Now, whatever they make out of this, as I always say, people, you take the information, do what you want with it, but it is real. And we have someone who is an expert at this business of science and health. So let's break down the genome and what is science today. I mean, go deep, baby.
Okay, well, I like to ask everyone, from the smartest to the most lay person that, I like to hear people's responses. So can I ask you first, what does science mean? What does science mean to you? When you hear the word science, what's the first, analogy that you think of?
Well, I wasn't expecting that, but hey, well, to me, science is like the study of things such as biology, molecular stuff, and beyond that. I mean, it includes a lot of other areas, right? It's, from human biology, anatomy, to even, it can go extend to physics and other things, it's all under that umbrella. I mean, and listen, I'm not a big scientist personally, but my background was in science. I actually did register for med school and never went to it. And this was in a military, system. And so therefore I didn't want to become military and I went to hospitality. Go figures. I don't know how that worked, but really, so I did have a early background in science and biology, and I loved it. Now, of course, in there we studied anything from anatomy, the basic biology stuff, and then cells and so on and so forth. And then we did some deep physics and a little bit of math, of course, and all this stuff. And scientists, today, they're doing a lot of things, right? They do research. We have them in the tobacco industry. We have them in the food industry. We have them in every single thing. They figure out things, they manipulate things, they can make things, they can create things, good or bad. And we've had them creating the atomic bomb, the physicists, but I think that falls under the umbrella. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but that's just my view.
I love it. I love that response. I find the people that are farther removed from, call it the academics or from working within the field, they do almost an immaculate job of intuitively knowing what it's supposed to represent. And so exactly like you said, it's, this idea of study, and it really, in the take home message, it's a way to examine the world. If I examine the world and I do science, you can have it 100 years later and understand what I did and even replicate it. And so something science is something you build on. And, maybe go now in the directions of which, you hear the word science used today. I've heard the mystics, the yogis kind of say the science hasn't yet realized. And that sounds very reasonable. People can interpret what that person's meaning, but that doesn't actually have any grammatical context. To have a realization requires a central nervous system, memory, and this ability to be able to process a comparison between the memory and whatever's happening in the moment to have a realization, right? So that doesn't work. What other kind of ways? The atrocities committed in the name of science. Unless there's a guy named science, I assure you, all the atrocities were done by human beings that had a callous disregard for life, not by science. Science had absolutely nothing to do with it. It was just a tool and the methods they used to get to that. Let me think of another one here. One I can get behind, and I've heard recently, is I am science. And I'm like, okay, it's getting closer to what I would think you're having the right way of having fun with it, because you're living evidence. Like, you are the possibility of showing what can happen in this reality, right? And one of the worst things that I've heard recently, and it's become, somewhat almost like a mantra for people when they don't understand context or they're not comfortable with questions, they'll say, well, I trust the science. The whole point of science is to take trust out of the equation, right? The science is supposed to give you knowing of, and you knowing within a context, right? Like, We believe that the universe is, 13.8 billion years old based off light expansion, yada, yada, yada. It's not that it's guaranteed 13.8 billion, but based off of this type of model, this is our estimate. There's nothing of, like, die on this and hold as a great belief. These are the instruments we have, and this is the mathematics that we use, and this is the predictive outcome that we got. And so that is really the nitty gritty of science and where you can get so much confusion, because, you can take science into three, call it big ideas, three pillars, right? You need to have an observation. That's first and foremost. From whatever you observe, let's use your eyes. You observe something, then you have a detection system. Your eyes are a detection system. You don't want to use your eyes, you want to use your ears. Okay, great. We can build technology today to replicate the function of the eye, function of the ear. And so once you have an observation, it gives you a knowledge base. Now, if you do this portion of science wrong, you're done. There's nothing, there's no moving forward. And if you can't recognize if someone's conning you or lying or marketing, you won't be able to ask the right question of, hey, what did you detect? How'd you detect it? How do you know this? These are very easy questions. And they're always the same questions. People think like, oh, you need to have it written. No, the question only changes with the technology and the very specifics of what the individual is doing. The next part of science is what no one actually wants to do, but everyone wants to know, which is what did you measure and what did you compare it to, right? And this is the very important word people think need to remember or learn if they haven't, is that in order, if you measure anything, the measurement is useless unless you have a control. So I take a measure in myself. Great, I think I know myself. But unless I have someone to compare it to, I have no idea what the meaning of that measurement is. Is it super high? Is it low? Is it medium? Is it average? Does it mean anything? And so comparison is the means by which you can gain insight into something. And comparing two things that aren't meant to be compared is the bread and butter to how to do poor quality science. Now, there's an argument to be made whether if you don't compare properly, maybe you just didn't do science at all. You're just, you know, you just have a bunch of boards. You never built even a frame of a house. You know, you never really, sure, you have the parts of a car, but you didn't put them together. There's no car there. There's just parts. And so when you do this, when you have this, you know, measurement and you have a control, you get to something which is called evidence, testable evidence. In science, I think many people have said the words, it is evidence-based knowledge. And I'm like, that is really good. You really hit the nail on the coffin of summarizing a big part of science and recognizing that it has these three areas. Because if you go and you go to your forest, your local forest, and every year you say, these are the mushrooms that grow in my forest, that's good enough for science. You've done the observation and you put down knowledge for the rest of us. Now someone else can go in, pick up those mushrooms and start making spore prints. Okay, you're doing some kind of measurement. You've moved on to the next step. But if you didn't go in and say what the mushrooms that are present there, it's very hard to just start taking random spore prints. You wouldn't have no clue of any context. And so the whole point to the venture of science is for at the end, you're going to come to a prediction. You're going to come and you'd be like, okay, now I can make a guess. I know exactly what mushroom I have. I know the effects it's going to have. I can eat this one. This one won't kill me. And in the same sense, no matter how complicated you make the science, if you're not making a prediction, you haven't, say, gone to the end of, you know, the possibility of venture of science. So you observe something, you get evidence, and then you make a prediction. And as when you make that prediction, really what you're doing is you're creating a model. And this is where I see that the people that are really deep in the field of science have sort of lost this understanding of what they're doing. You know, they'll make arguments like if you don't have a hypothesis that, you know, you're not doing science. But hypothesis is part of experimental design. And it's actually quite a poor way of doing an experiment. And it is propagated by way of research grants and funding and the way that a lot of science is structured. But as we've really pushed the boundaries recently, you know, Human Genome Project is a great example. What was the hypothesis to the Human Genome Project? Oh, that there's a genome? You know, it isn't. There's a question, right? So you can frame your experiment in a hypothesis, which is going to make you really restricted in what you're looking at, which can cause for a lot of artifacts within research. It can cause a lot of bias in what you're looking for. Or you can set up your experiment so that you are asking a question and then you're gathering as much information you can from what you've set up as far as what you can measure as an outcome. So let's take example for caffeine. You can say caffeine increases blood pressure is my hypothesis. And then you go test that against a null. And that's it. If you find that that's true or not true. Or you can say, what is the effect of caffeine on blood pressure? I'm leaving the question open-ended. Now we can take a look at different demographics. Now we can make sense of like, wait a minute, it's not 100%. Sometimes it goes up. For some individuals, there's actually a blood pressure drop. And for a certain percentage, it stays in the middle. You can investigate further. And so the average individual has absolutely no clue the nonsense that goes on within the scientific community, right? I did my stem cell biology and I studied a very particular stem cell called the mesenchymal stem cell. It's a very popular stem cell. It's located throughout the entire body. It's located on blood vessels. It's part of the regenerative response. And it's also present in the umbilical cord, which is, you know, a lot of it, you know, interest today in like, can you harvest those stem cells and then use those for different things? And the amount of things that were completely wrong when I was trying to do my work, I was trying to set up a protocol, I was trying to isolate them, and I was trying to investigate, you know, their function in the liver using fancy, you know, call it next generation technology where I can get a transcriptome, meaning every single part of the genome that's actually being used. And, you know, maybe I'm going a little too specific there, but
it's all good.
Yeah. Hopefully that it's not, you know, there's a biology, there's a dogma in biology, there's a DNA, there's RNA, and then there's protein. And that's really sort of the bread and butter to it. But, you know, the stem cell itself, it was unbelievable how many things were just completely wrong. Like, it's just incorrect, you know, and it stood incorrect for so long that, you know, people were teaching it in their classrooms 10 years later. So this idea that a mesenchymal stem cell can become a muscle cell, it cannot. It can definitely 100% guaranteed it does not become a muscle cell. You know that the muscle cell only comes from a cell called a satellite cell. So the stem cell for muscle is called a satellite cell. The mesenchymal stem cell cannot become muscle, yet you can see how it's propagated wrong for a really long time. And so if in that field, you know, somewhere the estimates about 50 to 60% of science can't be replicated. And that's by a publication, one of the biggest journals that's been put forward saying the issue with reproducing science. But within mesenchymal stem cells, oh my goodness, you're looking at 80% of the stuff was completely like incoherent or just fully wrong. And people would still publish on it years later, even though information has come out to say on the contrary. And so, you know, this is something that's quite outside the thing, the grasp of the average individual that says, I trust the science, not knowing that, well, what science are you looking at? If you can't evaluate the science, shouldn't you go trust the person who's communicating the science to you? And I think there's a massive disconnect there. So, you know, this idea of a genome, I think, is very important for people to understand. So when you pull blood, you're not looking at genetic markers, you're looking at blood markers, which are far superior to your health than looking at your genome. So when you're born, you have a genome. When you die, you have the exact same genome. It didn't change. How you use that genome throughout life is everything. And it doesn't tell me at age 35, at age 55, at age 70, what you should be doing, because it's static. The genome, the way that you look at it. There's now other ways of looking at the genome, and there's one called the Horvat clock, which is very interesting and doesn't look at the sequence of the genome, but rather it looks at how does the genome look like? Is it full of soot called methylation, or is it not? And if it's not, then it gives you a younger age, and if it is, you're an older age, but you still have the power to reverse some of that. And so the genome, you can think of the genome like an instrument. It's like a guitar. You know, a human being is a guitar. Every single human being is a guitar, but how you play that guitar, you get a different human being. A dog is a violin. You know, an elephant's a piano. You can think of the genome as represented like an instrument. And if there is a problem, there's a problem with the instrument, there is no life. Right? You simply do not survive. So the studying genetics has really showcased that the vast majority of the genome, if you knock out the gene, simply the creature doesn't come into fruition. And if you knock out certain genes, you recognize right away what the problem is. They have a malformed heart. They have one eye. You know, a cyclops is real. A cyclops can be born, but it doesn't survive very long. And so why is that the case? It's because at one point in time, there was some cells that needed to separate into two eyes, and you targeted it with a chemical from a flower, and that chemical stopped the separation of the eyes. And so there's nothing wrong with the genome. The genome is pristine, but you weren't able to use it properly. So you didn't play your instrument harmoniously in the most important critical times, which is when you're young, right? When you're an adult, you can get away with a lot of things, but if you destroy your pool of stem cells, you're kind of done for, right? Like there's no coming back. You know, no magic therapy is going to do you justice. This idea of stem cells being implanted in you until someone figures out how to have the stem cell stick and replace, and you get the new stem cell, there'll be more than a Nobel Prize for that. That person might actually never see the light of day, because that type of advance would be absolutely astronomical for human society. So the genome is the exact same in every single cell of our body. You just have one genome. That's really cool. But yet you have over 200 different cells. Eyeballs, you have, you know, skin, tongue, intestines, heart, liver, lungs, spleen, gonads, you know, glands. It's unbelievable how many cells we have. But yet one genome is used in order to make all of them. And I think that's something that's very important for people to know, because the genome has been promised to be the, you know, the savior for you know, human health. It's been touted as going to really change, revolutionize health. It's revolutionized technology to study biology, but it really hasn't translated into the health of the individual. Like the way that I can make sense of 300, 60, 500 sometimes people that give me their blood, you know, proteins and metabolites, is that genetics was a part in order to help create the infrastructure and the databases and technology. So that's even possible for you to be able to recognize what those, you know, 300 proteins and metabolites are. So though the genome has been kind of a disappointment in terms of health, it's been astronomical in terms of technology and furthering our understanding. So much so that it gives us incredible confidence today when you present some type of information, it's very easy and very quickly to get to a point where you're just off to lunch and it makes absolutely no sense, or you're close to something, because there's databases that they're biological databases that share information. And these databases are phenomenal for mankind, right? They're open source and they give repository information in which now gives every single person absolutely everything they need in order to take charge of their health and make the best decisions. And, you know, I don't blame doctors. I've spent my time. I got to help at UBC Dr. Giroudi, who's the anatomist for the UBC Med. I got to hang out with Dr. Giroudi and assist him in teaching med students, anatomy. And it is not an easy, straightforward road to be a doctor. You know, you're really taxed for making sure someone doesn't die. And you're going to be hard pressed if you're a doctor that's trying to change people's lives in terms of what they should and shouldn't be doing. It's not your place to tell them. You know, if someone wants to sit at home on their computer and play video games all day, or if someone wants to, you know, eat and drink, you know, the stuff that's clearly causing them a problem, like, it's not your place as a doctor to be like, no, you can't do this. All right. So your place as a doctor to be like, here's what you need in order to stay alive for a little longer. And there's a nice, I think, very nice medium. And if people understand, that's what the doctor can do for you. Really, the medicine, the drugs that are available are, hey, you messed up somewhere. Here's a safeguard that we have today that we'd never had before. But unfortunately, people are using drugs as food, right? They go and they get a drug and they're like, now I'll take this drug for the rest of my life, instead of coming to and a realization that I am living in a way in which is going against something that's clearly telling me I have to stop. And I'm under the, because I study stem cell biology, because I like the idea of regeneration. That's an interesting concept to me. I'm under the impression that if you made it to an adult, then you have everything that you need in terms of a repository of powers, you know, call it genes, in order to rectify and put yourself on a course of complete health and vitality. We're set up to do so. Our immune system is unbelievably difficult to get through, and you have to actively inhibit it in order for something to get through it. So if you try to infect a human being, it's actually quite challenging. But if you don't try, if you just let them get infected on their own, it's pretty simple. They mess up. And I think that comes a big part of, I think gives me knowledge, right? Knowledge, understanding, time. And what I would say is something that people come to a point is they come to a point where they feel like they know enough. And ignorance starts coming in, right? Ignorance of what information is out there. And, you know, I see a lot of individuals, they'll, you know, for example, a wife will ask for me to talk to the husband, that the husband is under very weird impressions of what allergies are. And it's like, well, my doctor said this is what allergies are. And, you know, well, it's hard to convince that individual otherwise until they see different, until they experience different. And that's very reasonable, right? Like, you can only believe things until it comes into your experience, life experience. And this is where, you know, feeling and what people actually have as emotions are absolutely vital to their health. Whoever told them it wasn't, I completely bamboozled them, because science only backs and reaffirms the fact that emotions are absolutely key and critical to your health. And that's something we see in the centurions. We see in the centurions incredible, call it, understanding of how to have that feedback from their emotions. So, you know, it's not that they don't get angry, but when they get angry, they are quite in tune with what makes them angry. It's kind of, they laugh at themselves for being angered by, you know, another individual, or for something, you know, small, by a dog or some noise. And they have an incredible resilience in that aspect of they don't just let the emotion go by or suppress it. They use it. And so, you know, I'm kind of gone off here, but you know, this is sort of the what we call a conglomerate of what science has sort of become today. It's become almost a replacement for people's, call it, lack of religion that they've put in their life. And they simply say, ah, science will figure it out, like some kind of fairy godmother. And, you know, the genome is incredibly complex and very fascinating, but it's not the answer for most people's health when they're like, hey, what kind of testing should I get? You know, the testing they should almost always look for is something that's very functional and to the present moment, something that's going to be dynamic with what they're doing. And a blood test, a very fancy blood test, you know, even one that gives you 30, 40, 50 biomarkers, is very good because any one biomarker can lead you astray, right? Cholesterol is a good example of how you can convince people that their health's in jeopardy when it's not. You know, there's some other things that are more priority or more pressing for them to take into account than, you know, some elevated cholesterol.
Woo! All right. So that was quite a bit of real science. I mean, true stuff, you know. And I'm listening to you, and there's a few things that you highlighted big, you know. First, I love the analogy that, you know, as you said, the genome is just instruments, you know, that are unique for different creatures or species. So we're humans, we have one type, and, you know, animals will have a different, so it depends on the species, you know, and it has this genetic coding. I mean, it's like, maybe my analogy would be, you know, at least to my understanding, maybe like binary code, you know, that's created for the computer, you know, space, right? Cyber. And it's the same binary code, but it's written different ways, you know, to design different things. And we have so much stuff now with it, including AI and all these things. And there's no limit to what you can do. Maybe, am I getting the picture correct there?
Yeah, well, it's binary, but think of, instead of 0 to 1, it's 0 to 3. So there's 4, which just allows for more information to be put in a smaller amount of space. Yeah.
Which means we're more advanced than whatever we created. So yeah. that's a good way to think about it, right? I mean, I mean, depends on the level of belief here. You know, if we believe in a higher, you know, being or creator, well, ultimately we were created in the best shape and the best, you know, algorithm, if you want to, you know, call it that, right? But so that's a good thing, right? But I love what you said about the concept of how science has been, you know, portrayed, right, and also been kind of almost promoted, because there is a fact that, you know, research is funded, you know, education is funded, and the people that fund these things may have, I would say, ultra motives or alternate motives or hidden motives of maybe profitable, you know, outcomes, whatever that industry is. So I mean, whether it's the food, the pharma, all these things, I mean, so they're all under the scheme of the, well, I'm not gonna call it scheme, under the umbrella of science in a way, but it's to their own interest, right? Everybody goes into their interest. And so, as you said, things are being taught that are like 10 years in, you know, that are all wrong, you know, because that's how the way it was taught. And then the research was funded accordingly. So there is, you know, and I'm a good example you just mentioned, well, cholesterol, right? Is we've been talked about, you know, told many years, you know, that, oh my God, for at least originally in the early, I guess, 40s, 50s, whatever, cholesterol was like, cool. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, you watched, you know, the bodybuilders, they got, you know, 7, 8, you know, a whole dozen of yolks, and they just, you know, gobbled that stuff, right? And then you were like, all of a sudden, you know, you can't have yolk. It's bad for you. It's going to elevate your cholesterol, and, you know, you're going to die of heart disease, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then it changed the dynamics. So now egg whites only, you know, became the stuff, right? So it kind of shifted to that way. Yet, you know, now more than ever, I hear it's like almost a revert of that whole theory or hypothesis, as you said, you know, that no, actually, yolk is where it's happening, right? Red meat is where it's happening, as you mentioned earlier about the calcium. So it's changing and shifting back to some of the basics, because there are more researchers, scientists that are kind of almost defining it, you know, in a better way, or declining that whole ideology that's existed for a couple of decades, because it did serve a purpose. And the people that did the research, they did the research in a particular format. I mean, if you work for my entity, and my entity wants to do certain things, like, I mean, a good example, let's talk about food, right? You know, we're going to put a lot of sugar and stuff because it's going to stimulate the good brain stuff, and therefore people are going to get excited. And you know what? If they get a liver disease later on or some diabetes, we got this meds, you know, we got metformins, we got all the stuff that's going to fix the problem. Now, it doesn't fix the problem. It masks the problem. It may, you know, use different technology or different cell, you know, formulation to kind of almost mimic some effect or maybe change the way it's supposed to be designed. And again, that's not going to do anything for you. It's really just, you know, and that's the problem today is we treat the symptoms, but not the source. And so understanding what the source is, you know, you talked about the methylating, you know, stuff. I mean, if you go back to those things, you probably can actually, reverse things and change things to the better. And that's actually a good wave coming up now in discussion all over the world about how you can do these things. And there is real science, you know, behind it and research. But again, I love what you said that, you know, science has been given almost a blanket definition, different people look at it. We trust the science or we trust the process. But you're right also, science is only a tool for the people that are behind it. So you're a scientist and there's another scientist. One can go for life, one can go for death. I mean, literally, you can create poison. You can create, you know, nerve gas. You can create bad things that can destroy people instantly. Or you can create all the stuff that can solve life and help life and, you know, vitality and so on and so forth. So it all depends like everything else, right? You have a tool. Someone can use it, you know, to write. Someone can use it to stab. You know, a pen. I mean, just an example, right? I mean, if you look at it at that way, like what the hell, you know, Hurricane is talking about. But that's a fact, right? I'm into martial arts. We believe that everything can be a weapon, right? And so same pen that could be a weapon in writing, in history, and wrote the books and the encyclopedias that we use to get to today's, you know, science and knowledge, is the same thing that could be used as a weapon, you know, in another way. Now it could be, what do you call it, metaphorical, you know, kind of concept where it's, you know, it's a pen that can kill you with words, you know, stuff, but it can also physical. But so these are the things. So it's, we live in a world that is very, I would say, contradictory today. We have one wave that is pushing one agenda and the other wave is pushing the other. And we're not talking about religion here. We're just talking pure science, right? And so now you add religion, you add all the differences, and you add all the politics. Forget it. The world goes nuts. You know, but I love the scientific science process is that it's all, as you said, you observe an event, an occurrence, you kind of do the research on it, then you start compare it to different, you know, scenarios and see like what scenarios work. I mean, I love movies, so I'm gonna go to like Planet of the Apes, right? You know, that I think when they the guy wanted to cure the Alzheimer's, I think, you know, and so he started, you know, playing with all these different, you know, formulas until he figured out the blue whatever thing that actually created those smart apes, right? And he did kind of cure the Alzheimer's temporarily for the father. So I mean, it's you know, like, now that's a movie, but there's some science in there, you know, at least some light stuff. But these are all things that, you know, sometimes we don't get, you know, because we take it for what it's worth, right? But someone like you, it's like I'm looking at it from literally ground zero. You're looking at it from like a skyscraper or maybe above, you know, 30,000 miles away. I mean, you see in a bigger picture than the average person. What's a fact, right? I mean, you're immersed into this. You understand it deeper than most of, you know, us, you know, in the world. So you can see it. You can compare. Now, I know you're... The discussion we're having today was probably controversial to a lot of other people because they might disagree with your approach to it. But the fact of the matter, you're not talking out of your just, you know, the blue. You're talking about with facts and research and years of you spending and really focusing on this area of expertise. The best example you gave is the stem cells. You know, one stem cell that is being promote in one way is not really what's going to create, you know, this thing, right? And these are things that if you talk to a normal person, and I'm a normal person, I mean, I would just take by whatever you tell me, right? I mean, right now you're on the show, you tell me this, I'm taking. The reason I trust what you're saying is because I know you're giving me the comparison side by side. And that's the thing, like sometimes when you hear from one source, always look at the other source, what the other body say. And then you can make, you know, own intelligent, I guess, you know, opinion, form your opinion about, you know, things based on all the facts before you make a judgment on things. So thank you. Now in today's science, right? You've kind of almost articulated well the concept and you know how it is. But now let's relate that to the aging process that we kind of alluded to before. I mean, there's got to be some key things that we can do, not so much about the aging or the aging or longevity, but really the healthy cells to convert this body to operate to the maximum level with its own genome, if you want to call it that. So how do we do that? You know, what are the steps? What are the pillars of good health, I would say?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. You know, had you asked me 5 years ago, you know, what my oversight of health and kind of the understanding of biology was, I would have told you, yeah, I'm on that skyscraper. But the more individuals that have come into, you know, to me with their information, the more I see it is quite difficult. You know, the complexity is unbelievable. And, you know, I've been quite humbled with, you know, what some people have been able to do. You know, people have cured their diseases that, you know, on call it the major, you know, narratives would be uncurable. People have done it. And, you know, that really gives me motivation to be like, okay, well, keep going, right? Don't pretend like you know it. Actually know it. I actually know the genes, actually know the proteins, actually know, call it, you know, the function of what they represent. And really for like good health, we can think of two things to keep in mind with day-to-day of what we're doing. One is, what is the cell? How clean is the cell? How well are we maintaining it? How well are we protecting it? What is the stability of our cell? Because that cell has to work with trillions of others in order to give you functions across organs. So two parts, the cell, and then looking at the physiological correspondence, your lung function, your heart function, your digestion, so on and so forth, cognition. And there's things that happen on the cellular level when you call it live, quote unquote, a healthy life, right? When we look at athletes, they usually have very good cellular markings. When you look at the cell, it looks great. The genome looks stable. The proteome in there looks great. You know, the metabolome looks really, really, really good. But athletes tend to have earlier death than a lot of, call it the average individual that's not plagued by disease. And they'll die with some kind of sudden cardiovascular or a stroke. They'll die from those events. And so they did a good job of doing hey, keep my cell in top shape. They did a very bad job of saying, hey, these cells need to cooperate with the function, because an athlete pushes themselves for quite, you know, a number of years. Their heart becomes very, very strong pump, but then they falter and they might pick up bad habits, and their heart is still really strong, but their blood vessels will weaken, their blood will thicken, and then you're going to have an event where the pipes simply can't hold the liquid that's inside, and the event happens, right? The damage happens. And so this is the thing if you wanted to live long. One, you have to take care of the cell, and two, you have to take care of physiology. So all the things that, you know, I would kind of suggest here forward are doing both. They're taking care of both. And there's no particular order here to kind of jump at it, but the first and foremost is like the abuse of food. We are absolutely bamboozled by calories. You know, I almost always have to spend a good chunk of time in order to reshift someone's mindset and understanding of really what nutrition is and move them away from calories. Calories are on every single food packaging, yet they have nothing to do with nutrition, right? Calories is how much heat energy you'll get if you burn this thing in a bomb calorimeter. That's where you get calories from. However, it doesn't tell you if this thing is going to provide you any nutriment. Is it going to nourish your body? Is it going to support your brain? Is it going to do anything for your liver? Is it going to help your intestines? Is it going to provide your heart with the energy it needs? Is it going to hijack your metabolism? So who cares if it has a, you know, like low calories, if it completely ruins your metabolism? And so this is something in which, you know, I simply separate into two very simple ideas. One, calories, if you understand them, and some people that are nutritionists that I've worked with, you know, they have a phenomenal understanding of calories, and I can get them to the concept of macronutrients. And macronutrients are this idea of fat, carbohydrate, and protein. And this is a terrible way to structure, scientifically speaking, the complexity of how the body uses the nutrients for, call it, you know, the way we sustain ourselves. And the reason why it's a really poor way is because fats don't belong as a macronutrient. If you wanted to say the macronutrient, really what they were getting at with that concept is what part of food when you eat it goes into directly conversion of energy. And that's the idea of a calorie, is you're getting energy, quote unquote, from it, right? Without going too much into the molecular details and the names of them, is the idea that calories are supposed to equate energy, but you have to have this constant understanding of bioavailability. I eat something, do I even have the enzymes necessary to pull that in? And people will think that this is a very simple notion, but you take a can of tuna, and I guarantee you, you're not getting the calories from that. If you don't eat beans and you eat half a pound of beans, I guarantee you that you did not digest completely your beans. You need to work with what you're eating. You need to change the enzyme expression so that you can properly absorb those aspects of nutrition within the bean. So fat, if you want to say fat as a macronutrient, really what should have been said is triglyceride, right? The particular portion that's used for going from fat into energy. And the reason why that, because fat is probably the most complicated of the molecules. And it's very complicated because you use fat. What is your brain? If you hold a brain, what is it? It's primarily fat. But, right? So you have to eat something that's going to become that, the substance, the composition of what you are. This is the idea of nourishment. And so your omegas, people I'm sure have, you know, heard the idea of omegas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, omega-3 by far most important, right? So I think very few people know that why omega-3 is important is because we have the enzyme machinery to go from omega-3, 6, 9, but we cannot go backwards. We don't have those enzymes. And so there's an issue if you eat too much 6 and not 3, because it's going to cause lots of inflammation, right? And I'll get to this idea of inflammation here in a second, but it pretty much pools in a metabolic portion. It doesn't be able to get processed, and then it spills over into areas where you don't want it. And omega-3 is phenomenal because you use it in your brain. You use it in your cells. Like every single one of our cells likes to have omega-3 as part of it, part of the membranes, part of the signaling. It's also used by the immune system as an anti-inflammatory, meaning it is used by the immune system like a control lever, right? So this is another thing that we need within our nourishment is we need, call it, regulators, foramen, right? When you eat something like omegas, it acts as a regulator for inflammation. It keeps your immune system in check. But if you're over-consuming, in a very simple way, you're overburdening your liver and it's spilling over into your blood. It's spilling over into your lymph. That's why you have allergies. That's why you have issues with hyperreactivity. It's because you have overburdened your detoxification systems. And it's just that simple. So this is the idea of nutrition. Here, very simple, is that one, you eat things for calories, very simple today. And then the very hard thing is that you're eating for nourishment. And the nourishment part is quite complicated because unless you're interested to spend time with, you know, what is called the fabric of life, the molecules of life, you know, you it's not going to make sense to you, right? Omega-3 is one great. Another one, for example, is vitamin A. If there's a reason to watch out for eating too many egg yolks, it's not the cholesterol, it's vitamin A. It's because it's high in vitamin A. And you can't have an exorbitant amount of vitamin A because it'll, again, toxify you. And, you know, we can go down the list. Choline. Choline is absolutely critical for us to ingest. I think very few people have ever heard of that. I say these things more to bring people's attention of how big the conversation actually is and to give them understanding that you need to come and participate to the conversation, right? It's interesting to participate in the conversation. There's nothing scary about it. These are just, you know, it's like picking up objects. The molecular world is confusing because a few people like to play this game of I know more than you. And so they like to almost belittle and feel superior. I'm not anything. My goal here on the planet is to simplify things as simple as possible so everyone can come to the table. And when we do, we can then move forward. I can learn more from you if you have just a good understanding of that these things aren't so, call it, out of reach, you know? And so, like, coming back to what's taking care of the cell. Anything that damages your genome is absolutely the most imperative to avoid, right? Because the genome in a cell would be the analogy to your gonads as a full adult. The genome regenerates. It's the renewal area for all the proteins and the machinery that makes up life. So if you can't renew the proteins and machinery, which need to get turned over pretty regularly, you can't stay here very long. But if you destroy the genome, you can survive for a day or two. So it tells you that the genome is not the place where it's decision-making and this experience of life, because you're still experiencing life without one, but it is the absolute necessity to be able to live here longer than a day or two. So if anything damages your genome, you need to stay away from it at all costs. And so what's the most obvious one? Well, it's radiation, right? What protects you against radiation is iodine. And so here's the thing that everyone should consume today, because our nutrition is absolutely depleted in it, but it also protects from radiation. And me and you are sitting in front of technology. This is something our forefathers did not have to deal with. My big statement is we are the sickest, unhealthiest population that has ever existed on planet Earth. And it's because There has never been a civilization that has had more population. There has never been a civilization that has been exposed to more chemicals, to more synthetic chemicals. There has never been a civilization that's had so much exchange of those chemicals and then from different regions. And then not only that, but now we have new technology that has never been even remotely close present in people's lives, something that we can, you know, stare at well into the night, having no idea what's going to do in terms of long-term consequences. So protect your genome. And then the proteins that make up your life are really indicative of whether you're going the right way or wrong way. So when someone comes to me and I get to see their profile, I can very easily tell whether there's going to be a problem within 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and what that problem is going to be, because the proteome it's stable enough to showcase whether a person's actions are causing, you know, let's say beneficial adaptations to their activities. Maybe, for example, I take a blood test, and this is what I coach people to do. Take a blood test. Now take 3 months to do a program that you're interested in. Maybe the person's interested in training for, you know, let's say an MMA fight. I've worked with MMA individuals. Maybe the person's interested in doing marathon. Maybe the person's interested in simply, hey, I want to get fit. And did the fitness actually translate into me getting benefits in that cellular compartment? So the proteome tells us that. And then the metabolome is really complicated and not too much, I would say here, but a lot of confusion can happen from metabolome. And so careful for people that get that. If you get folic acid, if you get creatinine, you know, I've had an individual had 17 times the out of range value for creatinine. And, you know, doctors told him he was about to die. Right. And then he came to me and I'm like, did you do a lot of training? He's like, yes, I did military training. I'm like, all right, no problem, man. You just need more time to recover. And you know, the value will go down. Go get tested in 2 weeks. You know, take a solid 4 days break. And he's like, I can't. I'm like, all right, well, when you can, then go get the retest and make sure it comes back down. You know, because people put themselves in those scenarios. And, you know, what are you going to tell them? Hey, don't train. You know, hey, don't do your military training. Like, that's not an option, right? For some people, right? So the big part of nutrition is very simple, is that you must respect the biology. And it's a very simple thing to remember here, is that you need to eat things that are alive. Right? It's that simple. If it's alive, not about whole food, not about, you know, carnivore or this, there's benefits to meat, there's benefits to eggs, there's benefits to vegetables. We live in a time where the question really is do you have quality in front of you? If you have quality food, you're good. But understand that what's at the supermarket is a challenge to get there, and there's going to be used preservatives, pesticides, chemicals, and are you ingesting more chemicals than you're able to detoxify? That's what's causing a lot of the problems. That and the fact that people aren't respecting their detoxification machine. So this is where, you know, this idea of intermittent fasting is not fasting. That's just a nice buzzword. It's just the basic default way that you must live as a human being. You must respect the fact that when you eat food, you are turning on enzymes, you're turning on the programming of assimilate my environment into more Daniel, right? You eat a steak, you're going to assimilate that steak into Hurricane, and it's going to become you. And so that process also now makes you more vulnerable. That should make sense. I am turning on the machinery saying, I want the outside world to become me. If I eat things at that time that also have a lot of problems with them, then I'm going to accumulate them in my system. I'm going to hold on to them. And so when you're eating constantly and you're eating low quality food, it's one of the worst things that you can do. Right? One of the best things that you do is, even if you're eating low quality food, restrict it to at least one portion a day, because when you're assimilating, you're not doing the other thing. So what's the other thing? The other thing is protecting, repairing, resting, digesting. So I think a lot of people know this. They know the rest and digest and the flight or fight nervous system. And it makes complete sense when you tell them, hey, your flight or fight will completely override your rest and digest. That makes sense. Hey, a lion's coming, it doesn't matter what you're digesting, run away from the lion. If you can't get the muscles, you know, the flight or fight gets blood into your muscles and out of the digestion, right? That's the sympathetic nervous system, in order for you to escape. Because who cares if you're digesting food or trying to fight off an infection if you get taken down? Now it's no longer the preservation of the individual. But when you tell someone that eating completely shuts down detoxification and repair, for some reason that concept is like really difficult for them to grasp. So if I eat every single moment of the day, I constantly snacking, I simply cannot turn on the programming, the machinery this equivalent to the rest and digest. Really, it's the same. The rest, the vagus nerve needs time for you to relax and rest. This is why you're told, if you were lucky, that you can't eat when you're stressed. You can't, don't go have the sweets and the sugary bullshit when you have emotional stress. When you sit down at the table, it should be a nice, pleasant, you know, family time where you're happy to see people, where you're sharing things. Even if you had a bad day, the fact that you're with good company and sharing is an aspect of put yourself in a state to activate this, the rest and digest part of the nervous system, which allows you to assimilate your food. And so this is some of the stuff that is, you know, gone away from people's understanding, and they think it's just good enough, like a car machine. I shove in calories, it calories in, calories out. And there are people that are extremely educated that are abusing this knowledge and confusing individuals and capitalizing on it. I highly doubt that they believe in calories in, calories out. I don't think, that's why they don't participate in public, call it debate, or even debate with anyone that has any kind of science credentials. It's because they know that this absolutely can't hold water with any kind of basic enzymology. And so here it is. The make it in simple is that, one, you need to eat live food. This is the whole aspect of nutrition. You know, the other pillars, they're all very simple, right? This understanding of incorporating real fasting in your life. When you incorporate fast, it's nature's operating table. You turn on the machinery and it usually sucks, right? It usually sucks because, you know, we all ate cookies, we all ate whatever, some ice cream, and I love ice cream. I love, you know, the grains and the wheat and all the baked goods. And so it's in our system. It's making it, call it, a little more sluggish, our blood a little more viscous. And when you fast, you're cranking up and turning on the processes to remove that and eliminate it. So you're upping your elimination processes in your body. And if you've spent, for example, you know, someone's been on a medication 40 years ago, and now they finally realize that, okay, I need to do these kind of processes, this type of protocol in order to kind of get back my life. You can see within their urine drugs that they had 40 years ago. It's phenomenal. So a drug has stayed within the person's system somewhere, and they're able to expel it at that time, which really, this is the smoking gun evidence. This is the science to tell you what is really happening in terms of the possibilities in front of you. Now, not everyone's going to have testing all the time. Not everyone has access to that. But understanding that this is really where the leading edge information is telling you is, you know, I think something important for people to get. This is why I think it's great for us to have this conversation, so people understand really where the boundaries are. And I think, you know, a lot of the doctors that I speak to find it useful to know that, oh crap, you know, like, these are some of the possibilities. This is the data that's come out. And we have a very important thing of understanding that fasting is key. Any culture that's practiced fasting has these centurions within their culture. The next part is sleeping, and call it, you know, naps. People take naps during the day, seem to have a better life's health span and lifespan. But a big part goes into that, where really those individuals are rising with the sun or even before the sun. They're going to bed on time. Their sleep hygiene is immaculate. You know, they like sleep. They sleep well. And they have the ability to rest, right? Something that we, I think, in our society have very difficult to do with our constant need for stimulation. So this idea of sleep and naps has been a big part. The other part here, which I'll be very, this is very cautious, I'll say one more time, I'll say very, very carefully, but a tiny bit of alcohol, distilled liquor particularly, has been shown to be almost like a elixir for health. And I can speculate as to why. You know, I can speculate in terms of the biology, but it just, a tiny amount really goes to show. So the cultures that have the centurions in large percentages, they usually have like a thimble-sized distilled liquor with their evening meal, or sometime within, call it, after their work. You know, they'll be out in the sun, they'll be in their gardens, they'll be in the markets, they'll be on the land, and then they'll have a little bit of, I'll call it, this distilled liquor as almost a way to like meditate or you know, chill out at the end of the day. And then the last one is, you know, the cold is really what makes it easy to see in terms of the information or the data. But exposure to cold is a stimulus that causes the human being to rise to the challenge and is very beneficial. It's a very potent stimulus for the human being when they are present within that cold and that they overcome it. And there's a counterpart to hot, to heat, but it doesn't seem to do as, call it, a longevity benefit. It has a massive health benefit. But, you know, one thing that we see I'm not sure if you heard of a Bergman principle, which is an eco-geographical principle that when you look at species across the planet and from equator to the poles, you'll see that as you go closer to the poles, the creature is bigger. It, you know, so you look at penguins, penguins are the biggest thing, the whales. So the species gets bigger as you go, the polar bear, it's, you know, so, and it obviously there's going to be some exceptions where this doesn't play, but this understanding that cold is a very strong stimulus. And we are the one mammal in where cold has a profound difference than every other mammal on the planet. And it has something to do with what our cells express. So within a mouse, within a dog, they'll only certain cell types and certain tissues will express this protein that allows them to dissipate energy for heat. But the human being has that protein almost everywhere. So when you are present within the cold, you're allowing your breathing apparatus of the cell to flush. And when we expose ourselves to this day and age, for example, chronic stress, it will cause our breathing apparatus within the cell to become clogged. So we can breathe in no problem from our lungs, but on the cellular level, that oxygen is not used very well where it needs to be used, right? In the mitochondria. But it's not used by our breathing apparatus of the cell. And so the cold is a way to almost force to flush that out. What's another way to help flush that out? Well, it's breathing exercises that raise your carbon dioxide level within your blood. When you do breathing exercises, deep diaphragmatic breathing exercises, carbon dioxide builds up and allows you to bump out things that have stuck to your breathing apparatus. Now, I think everyone knows cyanide's toxic, right? Cyanide kills you. It kills you quick when large concentrations, or even in small concentrations, relative, right? But what is cyanide doing that's causing it to be so detrimental? Well, it's doing this process of binding to your breathing apparatus within the cell and suffocating you on the cellular level. So no matter what you do, unless you knock out the cyanide from the protein, you're done for. Now, things can get in those proteins that don't do as, call it, all in as cyanide does, but they'll do like, oh, I'll mess you up 30%, 40%, 60%. And so this is what really, it's the difference between healthy metabolism and not healthy metabolism. This is what, when you say I have energy, I don't have energy. And really, I think that's a kind of key and maybe a conversation for another time, but this idea that like, oh, I need to eat to have energy. And it's just, it's a language that's put people in a hypnosis to think that I need to constantly eat to have energy. You have plenty of energy in your body. It's access to that energy that's the problem. And, you know, maybe something on the here that's an interesting kind of fact, and something I'm learning about too, is that there's things that we kind of have for understanding, like the heart is a pump. The heart actually doesn't pump. Here's something very specific, super nuanced. The heart actually vortexes blood. So it doesn't, it's not like a river flowing through your arteries. It's actually spinning against each other, almost like in this helical pattern. And so what happens when your blood's thick and it's not spinning so, call it, intricately like it is for somebody else? Well, the person feels awful. You can see that when the blood is not vortexed and it's just moving through in this kind of, call it, flowing fashion, they have no energy. They have no motivation. So how much of what we're experiencing these things is even remotely close to what we're saying with our language? And I've come to see that very few people are saying anything with any merit. You know, it's sort of just this hodgepodge, this swirl of, can someone please check my understanding? And then I obviously have a little bit of a hero complex where I can't wait to tell someone this information. I have this desire to share things for the common good. And, some people can't wait to hear it. Other people are not ready. But, the intricacies of what really health is only becoming more and more comical, because everything I've listed is really free, right? Like your exposure to cold, completely free. I mean, obviously, if you're in Jersey, it might be a little more difficult to get access to it. But fasting, completely free. Your breathing and sleep, completely free. The modalities for health are very much so integrated with what our existence is. And the biggest challenge, I think, is to people understand the ins and outs of nutrition. That is something to brag about. You know, if you're someone that's growing some aspect of anything in terms of food, great. You know, if you're in any way acting like a shepherd, meaning that you're cultivating the world, you're participating in bringing up, call it, prosperity and health for other individuals, I would say that's something to brag about today's day and age, because it's not anywhere near to the level that it needs to be for us to thrive as a society.
Well, there you are. I mean, I'm listening to you, and I can't even, I don't want to even, stop. The stuff is just flowing, and it's a lot of stuff. I definitely will hold you to that comeback, opportunity, because there's more really that we can break down into the discussion, especially because you've touched on the cellular level, in terms of like what we need to do with it. Then you talked about the functions of our, organs. So those are two big pieces that we need to kind of make, a good balance with, because it's not just one. Because I love what you said, you can work in one and then everything else is not functioning. So you basically are, disabled in a way, because the other stuff is not functioning properly. You're not optimized, right? I love what you talked about, like the concept of the enzymes, for example, and how they need to be there to specifically, specific ones for specific things. And if you don't know what it is, you're taking things that are not being, I guess, processed correctly, and therefore you're just building that nastiness and toxins or free radicals, as they may call, in the system, and they're just hanging in there, finding maybe a bad cell to damage, whatever, right? So it does have that. Then you talked about just some of the deficiencies we have in our nutrition because we don't have the healthy stuff, and it is a fact, as you said. I mean, today you walk into the supermarket. I mean, like a year ago, I didn't realize this as much as I do today. And a year ago, we started this health stuff, about 5 years ago, and I've been in the health, but we've been on the insurance side. So it's not, and that's one of the reasons I started this whole, iHealth, radio in the first place, was the idea that there's not enough information out there and there's no health TV or health channel, right? So that was kind of like my little thing, right? But then I started meeting people such as yourself and learning more and more and doing more research and stuff. And so we started the Nutritious channel about a year ago. And then I'm realizing, like, what the hell? There's no food out there. I mean, you walk into the supermarket. I mean, like literally, folks, if you're watching and stuff, just take a stroll in the supermarket. Don't buy anything. Just walk and see. And you're going to see everything there that is synthetic food. It's not real food. I mean, potentially the only food that there's going to be there that is real, and even that may be corrupt and because of pesticides and insecticides and all the stuff that's in it, it's going to be your vegetables and legumes and things like that. And maybe the meat, but the rest of it is all prepackaged stuff. You read them GMO business and everyone, there's like 20, 30, 100, types of elements there that you cannot pronounce. It's all chemical stuff. So you realize, I mean, really colors. Now, I didn't realize that. I mean, it's amazing how it's to your point earlier, we are so marketed, in a way that is like almost kind of hypnotized us, from the birth. I mean, like my kids. So just as literally as we're talking, I have a Burger King, Junior Mac, Junior Whopper in the fridge right now. And it's been there for about 10 days. And I have a hot dog from 4th of July that I'm actually experimenting on right now to just see how long those things will survive. Now, in a couple of months, I'm going to bring those things. And if they're still good, there's a problem. And just to tell you people, this is the reality of stuff. We eat and stuff. I love what you said. 40 years, you can still find some, reminiscences of drugs in your bloodstream. We have that with the PFS and all plastics, microplastics today. That's another problem. So we have all these things. Yeah, I love what you said about the idea of not having the right vitamins or having too much of it, not having iodine. I mean, you're right. We are a population, a generation that has not been on this planet before with everything that we have. As you said, chemically more, we have more population, less food, more processed food, more EMFs and radiation, being, listen, I have, I don't know, four lights, four screens in front of me right now. I mean, just to give you an example. So I'm, and a couple of phones. So I'm literally, being radiated, so just, I mean, if I did the gigometer, whatever that is, the radiation thing, I'm going to probably be like, buzzing, a little high. But so that's just to give you an example.
Iodine will protect you. So when the there's nuclear meltdowns in different parts of the planet, their protocol was give iodine to the entire population in schools, in hospices. It was just accessible iodine, and it prevented people from having, call it, fallout radiation. So iodine works.
Well, yes, but here's the challenge. Where to find iodine? And it's not in our food, because salt has been not iodined. they sell salt now. Well, salt. Yes. There's a discussion about that salt too versus real salt. And
iodine, very simple to get in the United States. That's been a little bit changed where they dropped the concentration quite a bit in terms of what's legally allowed to sold. So if you still can get in different parts, it's 5% solution of iodine and you just take 3 to 4 drops underneath your tongue. If you have Lugo's iodine, that's sort of the bare basic. If you have difficulty absorbing, or let's say a very sensitive thyroid, you want to get something called nascent iodine. And again, you can follow the recommended instructions, but it's very easy to tell. You can even drop it on your skin and you can see how quickly you absorb it. Or otherwise, you have to eat a lot of kelp or marine products in order to get that in your diet. But I mean, I travel with a tincture, a bottle of it. It used to be quite simple to get. And so the idea that it's now difficult always raises my suspicions as to why that's the case, why it was safe for, you know, over 100 years. And only recently now it's kind of been, call it, changed or barred to buy those things. And I've been tracking from the States and for Canada a lot of the stuff that they're attempting to pull off the shelves and make it prescription only, right? And I know in America it's been quite, call it a legal battleground of keeping things available, and for people that know, there's an abbreviation called GRAS, GRAS, generally regarded as safe, that was used in order to make sure that products can stay on the market because they fall under this protected category where they won't harm you. And if it gets that label, then it's very hard for, call it, the big pharma to have its tendrils and take it off the shelf. So iodine, I think, very, very easy to get. You know, you look for your pharmacy, ask them for not Lugo's iodine, ask them for 5% solution. And if not, you can order it to your door from online.
Well, so as we have that note there, so does that mean people can just get it and just have it, and maybe every once a week they just drop a couple just to kind of cleanse their radioactive exposure? Or is it the daily thing? I mean, I know we're not doing...
Yeah, if you're going to go for an x-ray, like, for example, you take 4 drops, right? You can see within a week right away, you know, if, for example, if you take too much, you'll have a high heart rate, you'll have heat flashes, you'll know that you had too much. Something like iodine, you have to be very, call it, small amount, consistent. Your body doesn't like to see minerals in general at high concentrations. It needs to see them slowly over prolonged periods of time. So even like 3 drops a day is... you're completely fine there. I haven't seen any individual have any issues with 3 to 4 drops, with even a 2% or 5% solution.
Well, Daniel, so just saying that just confirms the idea that we all are so deficient is not even funny, and we're so radioactive is not even funny. So I think we all should have a recommended, supplementation of iodine on a day-to-day basis to actually be able to do the stuff. Now, just on that same note, you talked about the omegas and how our brain is needs that omega-3 specifically, and how we need to have that. And again, we're not having enough of that because, you know, fish is being recommended as not healthy because we have high mercuries, and that's another problem, right? We have all these, I guess.
Yeah, so for omega-3, my favorite sources would be chia, hemp. Ooh. Now, the fish that are phenomenal, actually the best fish for omegas are going to be the really small fish, the anchovies, the sardines, the herring.
Ooh, my favorite.
And excellent, yeah. And then salmon is actually quite spectacular because it is low mercury, but high omegas, right? So it's quite the special fish. Not every fish is going to be super high in mercury. Tuna is decently high in mercury. Mackerel, those are the fish that are higher in mercury. And you do have to be careful with the farm stuff because they have quite a skewed profile of the fat present in them. So the farm stuff is actually probably worse for you than, eating the chia or the hemp. The other one is walnuts. Walnuts are extremely high in omega-3s. And then obviously, if you have the budget, just having like a krill or a fish oil supplement, again, quality is king there. And, that's how I've helped people with, shakes in their hands where, they're getting older and they can't stop shaking. It's been supplementing the omegas on really high concentrations. If you have brain fog, high concentration omega-3, start there. Two parts, actually. It's a high omega-3 concentration, and then work on actually hydrating your system, right? Hydrating your system doesn't mean drinking water. It means getting that water to assimilate with your tissues, because if you cut yourself, you're not leaking water. It's like it's thick, it's viscous, it's gooey, it's stuck together, it's gelatin-like. And so that water needs to be taken in by the system, which if you are having difficulty doing that, which you can mess up through different ways to inhibit it, you'll get all sorts of problems, right? So people that have had, call it cognitive decline, have completely stopped their cognitive decline because they simply got hydrated. It's kind of funny. It's funny in a sad sense, I guess, right? Because the solution was, you know, slow down and let's get water in you the proper way. And the simple thing to keep in mind, you're like a sponge. You know, like you need to squeeze yourself in order for then when you let go for the water to be pulled in. And you need to have salts and different things present when you're trying to hydrate in order to be able to pull it in. If you're drinking water and going to the can, you know, to urinate it all out within a couple of minutes, you know you're not able to pull that water into your system. And you know, one of the biggest culprits that's gonna keep us dehydrated, I drink it, but it's coffee, right? So that's one thing that we over caffeinate. And then it dehydrates us quite enormously.
Thank you for you're giving us quite a bit of tips here, and that's I love it. Well, the other thing that you mentioned, something a couple of more big ones was the fasting and the ability to allow the body to kind of detox because we had so much stuff that comes in. I love what you said that the flight, you know, the fight or flight mode that the body has. Because to your point, I mean, there is an old saying, you can't eat and go swim, right? That kind of thing, because your body is going to be focused on ingestion as opposed to like, you know, your muscle. And we need the opposite, right? Unless you see a shark, maybe that will convert. You know, it's not going to work that way, right? Then you talked about like really good habits of sleeping early, waking up before the sunlight, you know, sunrise, which will be also getting exposure to red lights and early, you know, light. So you got all the stuff. So you're talking about all these standard really, and it's backed by true science and research here because you do this work. And I love what you said about the fasting specifically, because intermittent fasting is the hip thing, you know, that's been going. We've talked about it in a few shows. And I've actually read into it that really a true fasting is not that kind of fasting. A true fasting is it's you know, water intake only and maybe a day plus. And I've heard even up to 3 days, you know, no food, you know, kind of diet just to cleanse your body. Now, what is that?
Let me jump in there just 1 second, because here's I'll just make sure. 3 days is I've seen safe for almost anyone. As soon as you start going longer than 3 days, I think you should talk to someone that's very knowledgeable, because it is dependent upon what you consumed the majority that how you should then deal with those next subsequent days. And so what I mean by that is that if you're a heavy meat eater, there's a certain way that when you come off the fast, that's important. If you eat other things, if you're a heavy vegetarian and you come off your diet, there's ways to be able to break your fast. And this idea of quickly rushing to bring nutrients back in, that's not really what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is the fact that the person will start eliminating waste that's very specific to them. And you don't want to introduce something to your system, one, that's going to pull the waste back in, two, that's going to do even worse, maybe react with the waste and cause a reaction within your stomach that's going to cause, let's say, a large amount of acidity to rise or your immune system to react. So 3 days, safe for anyone. 24 hours, that's phenomenal. That's a real fast. So if you're eating one meal a day, every day at 5 o'clock, you've incorporated fasting in your life that will take you, call it, to the best anvil to you know, respect your cell biology, respect the cells, you know, genome, the proteome. It does it quite well, the one once a day. The other thing that people have done, and they do quite often, is alternate day eating. One day they'll eat two meals, next day they eat none. That's fasting. So intermittent fasting, I think, is a nice buzzword. But you're not fasting.
Well, you know, thank you. I mean, it's just despite personal experience. I mean, I do observe Ramadan as a religious, you know, piece. And you know, some people, they will eat 3-4 meals in Ramadan, just like a normal day. I actually, we only have one meal, literally, until the next day. So you have, you know, at sunset. So when we break fast and we eat a nice, healthy, you know, little bit of a good mixture, and that's it. You're full, and that's it, until the next day. We hydrate. And you don't eat until again. So that's literally almost 24 hours. And I can tell you, when I do it exactly that way, the energy level, everything changes. And I'm not, you know, this is not, we're not talking religion. I'm just talking about the pure medical piece of it. And I've experienced this year after year. And before when I was younger, we ate all the time. Then I realized, you know, like I didn't need to eat all that stuff because it was just like, and that's the other thing. People keep gaining weight in that same period. I'm like, that's because they just overeating and we eat a lot of sweets and stuff. So we changed our diet a few years back in terms of like just having a little light stuff with salads and everything, a little bit of a mixture of all the good stuff you need. And then that's it. And then the next day, you're actually good. You know, you the first couple of days, you feel a little hunger. And then after that, your body is adjusted. You don't even feel anymore. You're not in a bad mood. You're not anything. You're good to go. So it does work. And so I love what you said. I mean, at least 24 hours, everybody can do it. You know, and that, by the way, it's not, there's other religions that observe similar, you know, 24 hour kind of span. And so it works. I mean, I think in Judaism, they do have an actual day where they do exactly 24 hours. So that's actually practiced also, you know, in there. And I'm sure they can relate to our experience here. And so we can go to a lot of cultures do it just before, you know, outside of religion too, you know. So it makes a difference in terms of people. So I can actually, relate to that myself as part of my experience.
One thing I found here, I'll just say, I think you'll appreciate, is you know, when I started doing this deep dive, what I found was all the holy men in every single culture. So from Christianity, Judaism to Islam, even within, call it the Taoism, the Hinduism, Native American, every single one has the exact same process of where they will fast for up to 4 days before they have their communion with God. And to me, it's actually fascinating that that's sort of the commonality when someone wants to, you know, connect with the higher power, is that they go through this fasting process. You know, whether you want to take the other aspects of, like you said, religion, this and that. What I'm kind of emphasizing is that all the holy men, all the holy individuals, whether the women doing too, they didn't get written down in history like the men did, but everyone did the process of engaging in this, you know, in this fasting. And it's, I think, integral with how we're supposed to live on this, the planet. When you want to actually have your brain be able to receive, call it the possibility, the ideas, the infinite, call it potential, it's very hard to do when you're constantly in a state of, call it activity from the food that you're eating. Quieting the system down allows you to rest, allows you to turn on what I would say your antenna to then start receiving information. And the information is the name of the game. That's why we're everyone's here for. We want to transform our consciousness, right? We want to transform what we are and, you know, become something even greater.
You know, it's funny you said that, because our tagline is time to evolve, and our motto is enrich your mind and soar beyond limits. So we are aligned, baby. Enlighten, educate, inspire, and motivate is really our catch here. So our mission. But really, it is powerful stuff. And I love what you said about this. I mean, I definitely want to come back so we can talk more in terms of details. But I do want to have one question about, you mentioned the blood test, you know, and like the full spectrum, you know, marker stuff. Now, where can someone access that? And can they use it through you, or do they have to do it somewhere else? How does that work? What's the best way to go about
it? Yeah, there's tests I can recommend individuals. So in Canada, there's one called Molecular U. It's very fancy. You get about 300 measurements. In the States, there's a lot more options. You literally order the kit to your door. Some of them are as simple as you'll go to your nearest clinic, they'll draw your blood and they'll ship it to the laboratory accordingly. And they'll give you their own results and whatnot. I provide the additional analysis. I provide insight and I provide connecting it for individuals to the other aspects of their life. Keep in mind that when a company has these algorithms, they function on liability and they function on trying to keep things as, call it, as middle of the road as possible. And they have a certain understanding of it. I bring my background. I bring the background of examining each of those biomarkers in three ways. In terms of risk, I think it's very boring for most people. If I say you have 40% increased chance of arthritis, that doesn't mean anything to you. Right. For the vast majority of people, I don't talk to them in terms of risk. I'll say, hey, you know, your metabolism is shifted towards diabetes. Let's address it. The risk is not so much, let's say, useful for the individual. It also doesn't really make any contextual sense in biology too, but that's aside. The other way is in terms of biological age. Biological age is very intuitive. Hey, you know, you're in your 50s, but you have a blood of a 30-year-old. Awesome, man. Whatever you're doing, you're doing great. Let's talk about what you're doing. Let's see if we can fine tune that, keep that blood in that regard. And so biological age is very intuitive, but it's also very noisy. You have to keep in mind that the biological age, so again, you're trying to do a comparison, a proper comparison, and there is no real comparison to you. You are the only you on the planet. And the best thing you can compare to is the previous you, and that's about it. But we still have to do some type of best guess. And the reason I say this is I have, for example, a 91-year-old with Alzheimer's, and his blood looks awful. absolutely atrocious, yet he's alive longer than a lot of people that have very clean blood. So keep that in mind. The biological age is a good estimate. None of it is, call it like smoking gun guaranteed, it's going to be the exact showcase. But again, things work with in certain contexts. Understanding that is important. This, again, what I bring to the table is quieting down some of those fears that people will say, oh, you're at risk for cancer. We can talk about that. We can actually make it make sense. And then the last one, which is not every blood marker will show you this, but it was my interest. That's what I spent over 5 years making databases for within the pursuit of the grad schools, is how does fitness look in the blood markers? Like if you exercise, does a blood marker change? And so the blood adapts to your fitness level. So it is in a way an indirect marker of how resilient you are. And it's quite fascinating because it's not as simple as, hey, you know, concentration goes up. Some things go down, some things go up, some things move within ratios. And to me, that part has been, you know, some of the most interesting things I can share with individuals, because I can tell them, hey, you have a phenomenal adaptation to what you've done. And it looks like you have a resilient system that can deal with an incredible amount of abuse, but don't abuse yourself. And so I was the guy that did a really good, I did a lot of exercise. I played national team water polo. You know, I did all, and I really pushed my body in ways in which I shouldn't have, you know, and I got sick lots of times until I started realizing how to take care of myself, realize how to cleanse myself, realize how to build myself up. And, you know, there's smart ways to go about, you know, doing the things that can cause us damage, right? Like if you want to, there's, I'm not saying everyone needs to live like a monk, by God means no. When it's time to party, I would love for you to go have fun and party, but to know how to do it in such a way where you can come on next day still feeling like $1 million, right? And there are definitely ways to do that if you know what's going on with you and what you're allowed to do in terms of cheating and moving within your biology. So blood tests in America, 10X is one of the ones I have caught the most experience with, and it's the one that I generally recommend. 10X Health Systems, it gives you a good spread. It gives a good spread so that even though if one marker is kind of like saying something, there's other markers there that can help us either confirm that that marker is a problem or be like, nah, that's okay. Hey, that's maybe your variation. Go get a test again with 6 months or a year, and then let's keep this an eye on it. Are there ways to address it? Let's try it, and then, you know, let's come back to it. And it really, it's keeping people off of prescription drugs. You know, this is so sort of like, maybe we're not going to get this big sponsors because we're saying this, but I'm for people using drugs when they need to, when they messed up, to get them back to a good state. But you don't want to take drugs for the rest of your life in order to be able to sustain yourself. I think that's only going to cause, call it a loss of life, loss of experience. And the blood tests are a good way, I would try to say, is get them before you're sick. And this is a paradigm that is not shifted yet within our culture, right? It's usually get it when you're sick, and all it tells you is that you're sick, right?
Well, you know, Danny, it's funny because I think we've moved from preventative and being proactive and preemptive to just reactive when it's already too late. And as you said, you're sick. Obviously, you got to do it. It's got to show that you're already sick. You know that you're sick. You got the symptoms, and that's why you're seeking help. So if we start doing this in preventative mode, then I think that's all it goes. So this whole exercise here is to know what's the picture before and after and what you can do to prevent the future and stuff. I love what you said about the biological age, because it might even prove the idea that, you know, we have a life that we're going to live no matter what. So good or bad and healthy. So that goes with that religious views of anyone out there that, yeah, we all have a predicted, you know, time span that we're going to live. But the difference is, how do we live it? As we stated earlier, this would work well. Now, I there is a question that always going to come to mind. How expensive is a test? I mean, because insurance may not be always, you know, picking up something like this because it's elective. You know, is it affordable? And, you know, and that's one. And the other question is really, how can people connect with you so they can actually, you know, work with you to determine a path for a better, you know, vital life?
Yeah. For Molecular U, I believe it's, if you wanted to get the big comprehensive test, it's around $600 Canadian dollars. For the 10X Health Systems, I think it's around $300, $400. I can't exactly remember off the cuff. Obviously, they change pricing, they change products in terms of what they offer, you know, entry and whatnot. It might even be as low as $200 American. And so, you know, it might sound expensive, but it's actually astronomically cheap, right? From the prices that it used to be with a decade ago, these tests and the amount of information you get is quite high. insurance companies, depending on, you know, which you know, company you're with and what kind of package you have, they will pay for it. But it usually has to come at a doctor's recommendation. How you navigate that, I think you would do better to tell people than I would. I simply do the science side of things, less so of the you know, the logistics of it. That is a monster all of its own. And if they want to connect with me, the easiest way is to go to the website Timeline Sciences, and you can just contact me directly. If you like the socials, I'm on X. If you message me directly, I will respond to you with an inquiry, even if you just have a simple question like, "Hey, can you answer me this?" And I'm very affordable. If you want to have a conversation, I charge 180 Canadian, and that's just to have a conversation. If you'd like me to do work, it's all dependent on how much work you're asking me to do, and they'll be pricing anywhere between usually a couple hundred up to $5,000 usually is the name of the game. If you bring me, you know, for example, genetics, urine, blood, you know, your performance metrics, this is some individuals that can do this, and they ask me to package all them together, you know, that takes, you know, a week, weeks time to, you know, to do the work. And so keep in mind that, you know, a doctor doesn't have the ability off the cuff to tell you all these things. It takes hours to be able to use the information, what's available in databases, incorporate your health history, your life history, your decisions, in order to actually come out with analysis that's personalized.
Listen, it's incredible, but I mean, I think health is wealth, as we always hear, right? It might be the most important, you know, investment in our lives to know what's going on with us and either prevent any future damage and even sometimes reverse, you know, because if you work it correctly and you have the right stuff, because you talked about, you know, and again, that's why I want to have you back, you know, just to talk about, we talked about macro foods and calories versus now and what nutrients and nutrients you will have. All that stuff is fascinating, and it's on its own, but really the work you do can transform people's lives. And as you said, if someone is sick, they need the medication. I get that. You know, it fixes the problem instantly, and then it masks, you know, a little bit of stuff. It gets you back into, like, you know, 99%. You know, you still have the problem that caused it, so you just go back now and work, and you know how to prevent it from you know, reappearing and recurring again. But so that's concept. So there is that. And again, like, I love your being honest about, you know, the discussion here. It's not so much about the sponsorship. It's really about the message and the information, as you said. You know, there's always people that would buy, you know, and love the discussion. And there's some people that think that, you know, this is not going to be, you know, pro our, you know, mission here, but that's okay. Our mission is to help people and guide them and educate them, right? So Daniel, I mean, I know we've exceeded an hour, but it was worth every second of it, you know. And we can talk another hour. I mean, there's more for, you know, of you that you can share with us. And I know your time is valuable as well. So we're gonna end today's show, but definitely with hopefully an opportunity to bring you back. Folks, you do go to timelinesciences.com, check out Daniel's work, and certainly connect with him if you feel that, you know, you need to do something. If you know someone who you love that can use the help at any age, actually, I think, you know, it could still be an opportunity. At least live the vitality that you need and have less, you know, problems, less pain, and potentially prevent some, you know, stuff. There's a lot of preventative stuff that if you, I guess, not ignore it and you catch it along early, you know, you don't have to go through the ordeal of dealing with the pain and with suffering and the cost that can come with it. As they say, if you don't make, you know, time and money for your health, you're going to make time and money for your sickness, right? So it's just that kind of thing, right? So we don't want that. Daniel, any last words of wisdom for today's, you know, show?
I would tell people that most important thing is to get in touch and tune up your language, right? That mental aspect is absolutely the first and foremost part of health. Obviously, your social structure is, you know, integral, but knowing the language that you're using is access to the life that you're going to live. Anything that happens in the physical is a consequence of something that happened in the mental. So refine your words and do your best to stay in line with what you say.
I love that. Mind and body. I mean, that's all connected. And, you know, so thank you, Daniel, for really sharing great insights today. Beautiful stuff, very scientific. You know, this is definitely a show that we need to listen to a couple of times because there's a lot of technical stuff in it, but I think it will be just beautiful to actually hear it and comprehend it and dig in further. And again, do check out the site. It will be in the description of the show. I'm Eric NH. Thank you for tuning in, for watching and listening. Talking soon. Need any show, new topic. Bye for now.